Kyle, welcome to the Live Your Truth Now podcast. So happy to have you here.
Hey, Mike, man, it's really, really great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And today we're going to be talking about workplace culture. And you used to be part of the Fortune 10. I used to work in corporate in a former chapter in my life. And when I started doing some background on you, man, there was just so many things that resonated with me.
Yeah.
Because you were talking about this me-oriented approach to corporate culture, to workplace culture. You know, you got to focus on you, you know, dog eat dog, right? This kind of mentality where you got to compete to the person next to you. Yeah. As a former executive, I would love for you to just kind of open up the conversation for us today and for our audience to really talk about how this me first culture started and why it's still so prominent today in the workforce.
Well, I think it started out of very out of the best of intentions, right? So let's talk pre social media, because I think everything has changed, especially the focus on I, me, and my since social media has become what it is. Mm. But prior to those days, we had to shine the spotlight on ourselves to be noticed, to get job opportunities, to get promoted, to get, you know, to make our way in this world. And you know, by definition, the interview process and landing that dream gig is all about highlighting your strengths. And I think, not I think, I know that that paradigm follows us into the workplace. So if I'm outside the team looking in and I want to join an organization, I need to do my best to display and illustrate who I am, show the hiring folks in that organization all the good things about me. So in our brain, we're already thinking, all right, it's all about me. But what happens, unfortunately, is once that role is landed, we don't let go. We don't let go of the need to continue to promote ourselves, to put ourselves on stage and shine the light on ourselves. Now, mm-hmm. fast forward into today, with social media being what it is, you know, social media is just, it is a miracle on so many levels. But it's also, it's got some tentacles that should be, and I think they are playing a major role in how leaders show up today. So, mm-hmm. you know, the challenge today is not only do we still have to shine a light on ourselves when we're trying to get into a particular organization or get hired or whatever the approach is, we have more avenues and much louder voices and a lot larger platforms than ever before. So there's this, not only do we have the same needs that we had prior to social media, but now we have avenues to exploit those needs. And I have to say, Mike, I'm no different. I led this way for 20 plus years. The focus was always on me, always on my accolades, my sphere of influence, getting my next big bonus, having that fancy corner office and the really cool title, you know, all the things that everybody, or at least I aspired to do when I entered the corporate world. But I am also the first to tell you, I had it all wrong. I delivered fantastic results, but there was a cost that I think is often unspoken. And I know it drives a level of apathy and unfulfillment that I felt so strongly before I made this pivot that I'm on now. And you said a word earlier, by the way, Mike, that really resonates with me. You said this chapter. You talked about this chapter of your work, this chapter of your life. And mm-hmm. I am so on board with that metaphor, because the first several chapters of my career were led with an iron fist. I had this epiphany about we-oriented leadership, principle-based leadership more specifically, that changed my life, changed the lives of thousands of my readers. It's what compelled me to write the book. And it's the mission that I'm on now is like the last few chapters of my career is evangelizing this message.
Yeah. And I love that, because one of the things that also came to mind as you were discussing this too was this iron fist leading by force. And when you were talking about social media, you know, there is a duality, as there is with all things. Mm-hmm. There's a duality. There's a dark side to social media where I think a lot of people are propelling, or not propelling, but propping themselves up as the single most important thing.
Yeah.
And everything that they do is of the utmost importance.
Yeah.
And you're starting to even see this on LinkedIn a little bit more, where people are starting to like brag every single day, all the time, about every single thing that they do. And I do think there's a consequence to that, especially from a leadership front, because it's so achievement focused and it's so accomplished focused that you're actually missing the whole point of being a great leader. And one of the things that I would love to even talk to you more about is that the fear that comes from a lot of people of what happens when you focus on the team first. Yeah, and I think this, and I want to dig into this because I remember when I first got out of the military and I started working in startups, I was inundated in a culture where it was never about you. Right. Like you were just, you're in the Marine Corps. It's never about you. It is about everybody else. It is about the mission first. Mission gets done first, then you get to eat, right? Just in the most simple terms. But when I got into startup land, it was, that mentality was completely gone. Yeah. And there wasn't even a mentality of doing things as a team. And I saw a lot of people advocating for themselves, like, all right, I'm going to just knock this out. Like for 6 months, I'm going to just grind really, really hard. And then I'm going to go ask for a promotion. And that's like the rinse and repeat cycle. And I got caught up in that.
Sure.
Got really swept up in that because I was like, oh, that's how you get paid more. And that's how you make more money is like, you got to show how valuable you are and not the team.
Yep.
And I think one of the things that causes that dysfunction, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, is that we're so afraid that if we lead a team and the team performs better than we do, we are going to not only lose our significance, but we're going to get replaced and fired. Can you talk about that?
I would love to talk about that. There's a lot to unpack there. But you, one of I'm going to pick up on something you said, lather, rinse, repeat.
Yeah.
I use that a lot, actually, because let's pretend for a moment, Mike, you and I are, we work for the same organization. We're on a team of 10 or 12 people. We got this boss. Yeah. Let's call him Steve. We got this boss named Steve that, that you and I, he's not the kind of guy we're going to go have dinner with. We're not going to, you know, we're probably at home telling our significant others how Steve is a jerk and doesn't listen to us, doesn't value us the way that we should be valued, right? But lo and behold, for whatever reason, Steve is getting a promotion. So there's now an opening to lead our team. And you and I, like, we're crushing it. Our results speak for themselves and we both want to make more money and do more. So we're going to raise our hands and say, Mike, consider, Steve, consider us for, you know, he's got to hire us back though, right?
Yeah.
So you and I will inherently, and I'd like to think subliminally, we will start to behave in ways that will endear us to Steve, right? So we're going to behave in ways that we actually loathed. We're going to take on the characteristics because we need to make sure that he recognizes that we're going to play his game by his terms. And we need to kind of, as I said, endear ourselves to him. So you and I raised our hands. We've done a wonderful job kind of, you know, we could say kissing up, but I'm going to be a little more politically correct. We know there are some qualities that he values in his leadership approach, and we're going to try to replicate those because we want this job. So I did a better job than you at this. So I got the job. Now I'm now promoted into this new position, not because I'm a good leader, but because I've shown that I can replicate the bad behavior that this guy seems to value. So, and then this cycle repeats. The lather, rinse, repeat happens over. So most people, especially in big organizations, when they ascend into a position of leadership, they don't do so from a place of authenticity and like, I want to be the leader I never had. They do it in ways that endears themselves to the person or group of people making the hiring decision. What a shame. Mm. What a shame.
Yeah.
Now, so that's the lather, rinse, repeat. Now, you surface another topic that I am incredibly passionate about. And that is this notion that there's only so much spotlight. And as a leader, I can't prop my team up to any level of significance because that minimizes my position and it might even compromise my stability in the organization. And I'm here to tell you, it never happens that way. It never, ever happens that way. So here's what really happens. You and I in the same organization, I'm leading a team of 10. It could be a team of 10,000, doesn't matter. I've led organizations as large as 15, 16,000 people. Whether I led a group of 10 or a group of 10,000, my approach is exactly the same. It's just people. Just happens to be more of them. The reality is if my team performs really, really well, and I even got some stud performers that that are just really carrying the load of the team, the more light I shine on them, yes, it's true, the light is taken away from me momentarily. But it is right. unequivocally impossible for a team to be successful without the leader being recognized as also being successful. It's impossible. So the epiphany I had that forced me to redirect all of my energy away from me into those around me, and I do, man, I'm not perfect at it, but I have to tell you sincerely, I wake up every single day and try to find opportunities to make people around me better, especially in my business. Because when I make, there's a win-win-win when this happens. If I'm able to make someone on my team or help them or enable them to be better than they were yesterday, there's nothing wrong with that, right? You can't find a downside to that. So now I have a higher contributing team member in this team. So it stands to reason that the team results will also go up. And oh, by the way, the fulfillment and satisfaction that comes from me helping someone along on their journey and then watching the results become better than they were yesterday is the win, win, win. And it is, I have never in my nearly 30 years of corporate America have I seen an example of a team of someone with any seniority or authority in an organization say, hey man, Kyle's team's really kicking ass. Let's get rid of Kyle and go hire someone off of his team to replace.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen. It just doesn't. So,
right. Yeah.
And I say it this way. It's an old cliche, but there's a lot of truth to this. For someone to win in this world does not always mean that someone has to lose. There is spotlight enough for all of us.
I love that. And one example that I remember when you were talking about elevating the team of play and the leader getting credit for, I read an article, I want to say probably at the height of the Chicago Bears when they went to the Super Bowl against the Colts. There was a linebacker on the team named Brian Urlacher. Absolutely. And when Brian Urlacher, when he used to play, he talked about, I will be always recognized for my efforts on the field when the entire defense elevates their level of play. And I still remember that because here was a guy who was undoubtedly one of the greatest linebackers to ever play the game. But the mentality of the team first, that my job is to raise the vibration, raise the level, raise the energy and the performance of my team, our defense. And I do that by making sure that everybody else kind of raises their own standards.
Yeah.
But that's the outward focus, right? And many people don't have that. Something else that came to mind as you were talking about leadership getting credit. There's also this fine line as well where, you know, you were using the example of Steve, that people start wanting to focus on other people. And I believe we are inherently wired to help other people just naturally as being a human beings. I believe Amen. We're all meant to help people.
Amen.
Right? I hardcore believe that.
It's irrefutable, brother.
Yeah, right. And here's the thing, though, that's crazy, though, in corporate, is that when Susie and Johnny are in the same position as you, and you've helped Susie and Johnny do better in sales, and you start seeing them getting credit and them getting promoted, and you're still stuck where you're at, this is where the fear comes in that I want to talk to you about. Because if someone out there, and most of our audience are entrepreneurs, so they're in a mode of building their business or really identifying, you know, their truth and how to use authenticity to build their business. This story happens a lot. Mm-hmm. And this has probably happened to a lot of people out there in their chapters of their life before they were entrepreneurs. They worked for another business or they worked for another team. The fear sets in, though, Kyle, when it comes to Johnny and Susie are now getting promoted and they're running their own sales team and you help that person get promoted. You taught them the sales training. You taught them to be successful. There is no doubt in my mind that as the individual, you start getting scared. Mm-hmm. You start getting spooked because people are passing you by and you can't advocate for yourself and you can't get the pay that you want. Yeah. Someone listening to this right now who's probably had that story, how do you tell that person to navigate those challenges to advocate for themselves while also keeping the mentality that how they're going to achieve success maybe in the longer run? Because I do believe helping the team play is a long is a long, it is. It's a long-term game plan. It's not a short-term focus. The infinite game. Long-term game plan. Yeah, it's the infinite game. Yeah. How do you get, or how do you guide somebody who's experiencing that and watching their coworkers and their teammates pass them by? How do you get them to keep their eye on the prize with the infinite game?
Yeah.
I would start
the conversation not with Susie. I would start the conversation with Susie's leader. Because if decisions are being made to put people in places simply out of our recognition or realization of their ability to promote themselves, we're making mistakes. That leader has made a mistake. I'm not naive, brother. It happens. I get it. Not naive.
Yeah.
But where I think the focus should be is on the environment that the leader has created. How close is that leader to the members of their team, right? How well does he know Susie? How much does he know about the level of contribution that she's made to the organization, right? And you can't fake those things. You know, I'm always asked, what's the one or two qualities that are required to be a great leader? And my answer is always the same. The first quality is care. You have to care. And care is demonstrated in a number of ways, but one way it is never, one way it is always easily demonstrated is how connected we are. It doesn't mean we're going to go to dinner, and it doesn't mean we're going to be, you know, best of friends outside of work, but I need to know what makes you tick. I need to know, as your leader, I need to know what your goals, your aspirations are. I need to know what you're struggling with to the degree you're willing to share. But I believe it starts with that leader and the environment of care. Now, if that ship has sailed and we have a leader that is unable to recognize Susie's contributions and has maybe made a mistake in putting other people in positions that Susie feels like she is certainly qualified to be in, Susie has to make a tough choice. And is this the place where my value is being recognized? Or is it not being recognized at the pace at which I think it should be valued? Those are tough questions that only Susie can answer. But I will tell you, there's a statistic out there that says, on average, U.S. workers spend about 100,000 hours of our lives working. Second only to sleep, man. Mm. The only thing on this planet that you'll do more than sleep, or less than sleep, I should say more than...
100,000 hours of work?
Your entire lifetime.
Right. Wow.
Just rough math will say career starts at, let's just say 20, it ends at 60. We know that there are outliers on both ends, right? 2000, yeah. That's 40 years. 2000 hours a year times 40 is you're at 80,000. You sprinkle in some overtime.
That's mind blowing to me.
It is.
That's mind blowing to me for even over 40 years, just 100,000 hours. Like immediately where my brain's going right now is like, God, all the stuff that I could do.
Yeah, it's not working. To me, what's even more daunting, brother, is the only thing close that rivals the number of hours is sleep. It happens to be more. You'll sleep more than you'll work on this planet. But there's number two is work, which is what compels me to ask the questions that I ask. It compels me to do the work that I'm doing, because if we're going to spend 100,000 hours, give or take, of our time on this planet doing this thing called work, it needs to be something that we add value. It needs to be something that we feel we're part of something bigger than ourselves. We're having an impact, and it's fulfilling. It doesn't create apathy. That's what I felt for a lot of years, is apathy. Mm. So back to your Susie scenario, for me, Susie has to make that tough decision. If she feels, and she can look in the mirror, something I call the mirror of truth. If she can look in the mirror and say, I have given all, there's nothing else I can do to put my stamp on this, on the work that I've done. My work speaks for itself, and I'm still not being recognized. Susie needs to go, because Susie deserves better than she's getting.
I agree. Yeah. And when we talk about culture, you know, because I think the way that you've looked at this is that the way that you've, I guess, orchestrated this is that having Susie advocate for herself and go somewhere else because the leader's not recognizing her accomplishment, I think is a lot of struggle for people, because they feel like they're so pinned down at their job because they need that security or that safety net, but they're also so afraid of leaving because the uncertainty of going somewhere with the potentiality to have better. Yeah. It sounds great. It looks great in the mind, but when you actually start making, you know, the steps towards that, it can be
it's scary.
And it's very scary, and it keeps people there. So because we're talking about this scenario with Susie, I want to talk about workplace culture. Mm-hmm. There are people in the audience right now and listeners of the podcast that own companies and they're starting to build out teams and they're in a very exciting time in their life right now where, you know, the word scale is on everybody's desktop and we see it everywhere and everybody has these dreams and aspirations to scale their company, to scale their work. Mm-hmm. And now they're in the process of building a team. They're hiring team members. They're getting their first sales team in there. I don't want to start this conversation off or this part of the episode with you around dysfunction, because I think that gets talked about a lot mm-hmm. and, you know, toxic workplace culture. Mm-hmm. I want to talk to you about starting with the clean slate. There's entrepreneurs that are listening right now and they're going, this guy Kyle is saying stuff to me that really resonates with me about team building. And now I'm ready to start building my team. So Kyle, an entrepreneur listening to this podcast is ready to build his team or her team. What are the first three steps that you suggest they start off with when building out their team so they can grow their company?
I appreciate the question. And I would actually identify one, maybe two things. I don't even need three.
Okay.
And the first is that is difficult. The leader or the entrepreneur, the business owner needs to do some incredibly deep self-reflection. What am I good at? What am I not so good at? And I think as part of that self-reflection, we have to identify the level of the role that our ego plays in the decisions that we make. And the self-reflection should drive and identify gaps in what I need help in versus the things that I know I got and I'm really good at and I can continue to run with those things. By the way, I just described a team. A team is full of people that are going to augment one's weakness with a strength of another. Too many times we make hiring decisions based on resume accolades and we make decisions based on you know, how well somebody frames the work that they've done on a piece of paper. I don't hire that way. I hire for potential. I hire for work ethic. I hire for care. I hire for things like authenticity and someone that really wants to, this mission driven and wants to be something, be a part of something and add value to something bigger than themselves. I think it's not unusual and it's understandable why an entrepreneur, someone who has created a product or service, they've brought it to market, they've done the bleeding, they're sweating over it, and they've probably lost some tears over it. I get how personal that is because I'm a business owner myself. I understand the rub that comes when we're trying to expand and scale. But I will tell you, the more comfortable you can become letting go of things that you're not good at and hiring people that are good at those things, the faster you'll find that scale that we're all so desperately searching for. So that's number one. Mm. And then, well, I already alluded to number two is make sure that we hire for the right reasons, right? I like to think that, sure, there are specialties and there are exceptions to what I'm about to say, but the rule is, we can probably train most people to do most things. The length of time might be different. The level of investment for that training might be different, but we can train people on how to do the nuts and bolts, the core functions of most jobs. What we don't do a great job at is laying the framework and explaining to people in no uncertain terms the code of behavior inside the organization. So
that's good.
So right. So and that's the principle. And that's by the way, that's the spirit of my book. Begin with we is to lay out. Here's how we treat each other first and foremost. And if we're successful doing that behind the curtain, the odds are we're going to be so much more successful externally. So for me, just to round out the question, number one is clearly the self reflection and check that ego. Number two is make sure that we're hiring for things that are not quite as obvious. You know, I can put on a resume that I am, I mean, you can count the number of adjectives in people's LinkedIn profiles nowadays. Highly adept, skillfully negotiating, dynamic results driven, all these things, but they don't mean anything to me. I want to know how you behave and operate when the chips are down. I want to know how you behave and operate when we're facing a headwind or there are things unanticipated that are dragging us down. I want to know how you, when the waters are rough, man, who are you? That's what I want to know. And I can't assess any of that based on your Q4 sales results. I can't. Yeah. So but there's an overarching theme to this as well. You got to get to know your people.
Sure. Yeah.
But in the hiring phases, yeah, that's where I would encourage folks to consider.
I love that. And one of the things that it comes to mind too is like you hire character and you can train for skill.
Exactly.
And you know, I always, yeah, and I love that because, you know, for me at least, when I've been a part of organizations, some of the highest performers were the people that had overcome the most adversity and had a positive attitude about it. And so speaking of attitude, there's a couple more topics I want to, or there's actually one more topic I want to get into before we get into our last question of the interview and today's conversation. Leadership. One thing that sticks out to me about leadership is that there are also people listening to the show right now who are leading teams, or there's an entrepreneur right now that has a team and they've been doing the same stuff day in and day out, ready to hit the big payday for 3 to 5 years. And, you know, they think the light's at the end of the tunnel, but they're kind of losing steam, losing a little bit of enthusiasm, losing a little bit of energy around how long does this stuff have to keep up for? For leaders, entrepreneurs, people who are, whether the team is small or they're large organizations, leaders that lose that sense of passion and energy, what do you suggest on helping them get reinvigorated into leading their team again? Because as you know, leadership is a full-time gig. It's not just like check in and check out and you go home and, you know, watch Netflix. Like it is, it's a full thing. It's a 24/7 job.
Right on.
For people who may feel like they're losing a little bit of that spark or forgetting why they're a leader in the first place, what do you suggest to them to get them reconnected or reinvigorated to lead their teams again?
What a wonderful question, dude. What a really great question. I think the very first step is pat yourself on the back and recognize what you're experiencing is part of the process. It's part of the process and you're human, and to feel these things is absolutely normal. You know, it's become cliche, but the real value is in the journey, not the destination. And it's a cliche because it's freaking true. And we are all so hardwired to say, yeah, but, or until then, or when I, you know, those types of things. But when you're down in the suck, as I like to say, when you're down in the suck, when things are just ugly, I know what I try to do is I pull myself out, kind of sit on top and look down at the situation and say, is this going to matter a month from now? Usually the answer is no, depending on how grave the situation is. But also it allows me to be less emotional about the situation and lean into facts. But I realize that our hustle culture doesn't necessarily embrace that approach. So I would give this bit of advice. You're not in this alone. Depending on the size of the team, if you've done a good job hiring, I happen to think there is tremendous value in the authenticity that comes when you share these concerns with the team. Even including that we are on unshaky, uneasy terms with our financials, if that's part of the issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the worst thing that happens, and I see it in my business a lot now, is a leader feels as if they need to show up with this coat of armor that there's really nothing wrong. And what happens when we do that is we create this air of inauthenticity that our teams pick up on. By the way, the things that you're not good at as a leader, you don't even have to tell your team. They know. They see it every day. They see you bouncing into it every single day, right? So the point is, when we're authentic in sharing our concerns, and I don't mean and vulnerable, by the way, which I think gets a bad rap in this context. But when we're authentic and we can say, hey, guys, hey, team, even if it's a team of one, we've got some headwinds that we're facing. I'm a little nervous about them. You said something earlier at the top of this conversation that I think I'm going to bring back to this point of our talk. And that is, we all want to help others. It's in our DNA. So when the entrepreneur, the leader, the business owner is struggling, even if there's a team of one and I can lean into that person and say, I am really nervous about what lies ahead, that person feels valued now because you are treating them at a level at which they feel they belong. It's like, hey, if he's sharing this, it's probably dire. So hear him out. And then their natural reaction is going to be, how can I help? What can I do? What can I do? Mm. So don't sit in my, you know, don't wallow in it alone. Lean into the team. Be authentic. Share what's really happening to the degree you're comfortable, right? You don't have to overshare. But I think you will galvanize people around you in that way. And they'll take on some of those challenges with and for you in some cases.
I like that. That is so good. And I think something that you said before we get into the last question in the interview that I thought was just so good. We got to hit this back. It's like people who lead teams think that their team doesn't know what they're not good at. Oh man, that hit me pretty hard because it's funny under the notion a lot of entrepreneurs are team leaders. Mm. They think like the boss above them knows that they're not what they're not good at. Little do they know though that the team itself and the people they're leading actually know.
Oh yeah,
that what you're not good at, because they talk about you at the happy hours.
That's right.
They talked about you on the phone.
That's right.
And they talk and it's like. And I start thinking about it too. I'm like, oh my God, I used to do that shit.
So dude, look at it this way. Yeah. So if we can align and agree that that our team sees our weaknesses more than we ever have to share with them, what's worse? Leaning into those weaknesses and help and aligning folks around those weaknesses to pick up your strength, to pick mm-hmm. with their strengths. What's worse? That or them thinking or watching you, observing you. Tell them or behave in ways that tries to compensate and overcome what they already know to be true. Right. Mm-hmm. I know I'm terrible at logistics and details when it comes to certain things. So I always surrounded myself with more detail oriented people than me because I know that they will point out to me, and this is where the ego and the vulnerability comes in. They'll point out to me right. when I've missed something or when I'm wrong about something or when I'm just mm-hmm. blind to something. So I'll end this portion with this comment. I truly live my life and my approach to leadership with one equation in mind. If we think you know, to be a leader, you must have followers just by definition, right? And the best way to get and keep followers is trust. They have to trust you. They have to trust the message. Mm-hmm. When you're inauthentic and you're showing or behaving in a way that says I'm really good at this, but I'm not, that's inauthentic, right? So to gain that trust, this equation is etched in my brain. Relatability plus authenticity equals trust. Mm. So said differently, if we're struggling, I'm the entrepreneur and I've got a team that's watching us struggle, watching me struggle. They are also, by the way, dealing with their own things, personal, professional, otherwise. Yeah. They're struggling, right? So when they see that I'm also struggling, relatability, check that box. When I act like nothing's bothering me, there's no relatability because I'm some important entrepreneur and they're underneath me and they can't see how I operate, yeah. right? So if they see that relatability and my authenticity comes out to say, I'm nervous about this. I just don't know where this is going to go. But I know with the efforts of this team, we got a better chance than me just doing it on my own. So there's the authenticity. When I have relatability and authenticity, trust naturally follows. And now we have a team.
Man. That is so good, Kyle. And before I get into the last question for the interview today, first of all, thank you so much for your time and your energy and for sharing your wisdom and expertise. This was a phenomenal conversation. I think a lot of people are going to benefit just from what you've shared. So thank you.
Thank you.
Very honored to have you on the show.
Well, likewise. Thank you.
And as you know, we ask every single guest on the show what their definition is of living their truth. So, Kyle, what is your personal definition of living your truth?
I've thought a lot about this, man. And I've seen and listened to answers from previous guests, but mm-hmm. for me to live my truth, I need to be able to look at myself in the mirror, whether metaphorically speaking or not. And am I behaving in a way that is consistent with what I view to be my truth? And for me, it's these principles, the principles that are the foundation of my book. I should add, I wrote these principles as a guide for leaders on how to galvanize a team and create this environment where people can be their best. But I, for years, did not connect those principles to my personal life. So I found myself being somewhat of a hypocrite. One of the principles is we do the right thing always. And I found myself behaving in ways that if someone were watching, someone from my team or somebody somewhere were to see this behavior, they're going, that dude's a hypocrite because at work, he's all about doing the right thing, but he didn't do that in this scenario. Even from tiny things like leaving my shopping cart, my grocery cart, in the parking lot, not taking it back to the building. That's a silly example that I always lean on because it's not the right thing. So for me, to me, I live my truth by establishing my principles and holding myself accountable to them every single day, every interaction. Now, I don't want to mislead people. I'm not perfect at it. I mean, there are days, probably weeks on end, that I'm not very good at it. But still going back to those principles as my foundation, my series of beliefs and who I want to be and be portrayed as, that's what keeps me grounded and allows me to reset and continue those efforts.
Beautiful answer, my friend. And thank you so much for sharing that. And as always, love to have you back on the show and really appreciate your time.
Mike, you're doing really important work here, man. And it's my honor to be a part of it. So thank you for having me.
Thank you. Yeah. And thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And thanks to all of you for tuning into this week's episode of Live Your Truth Now. If you like what you heard, go ahead and give us a follow on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your audio podcasts. You can also watch other episodes of the Live Your Truth Now podcast on my YouTube channel. This is Mike Liguori. Take care. I'll see you next week.